It's not a diet as in a calorie-restricted diet. What it is a diet in the same way you might talk about a Mediterranean diet or a low-fat diet. It's actually a way of life. I think that if you do what I recommend in this book and eat the sort of foods I recommend, you will lose weight, certainly if you have a problem with weight. But it's primarily about sorting out your gut and particularly your microbiome, which is the 1 to 2 kilos of microbes that live in your gut and which influence us in the most extraordinary ways, which science is only just beginning to get to grips with.
Now, try and tell us a little bit more about this. You state that the gut is not a glamorous organ, but it's an important organ. So can you
absolutely
elaborate on that?
So the gut, you know, familiar, it's from your mouth through to your anus. It's between 5 and 10 meters long, so it's probably about as, took my gut and removed it, it's about as long as the room we're standing in at the moment. And what's really remarkable about it is its almost entire length is lined by a mesh of brain cells. So you have as many brain cells in your gut as you would find in, say, the head of a cat. They are neurons, and they are known as the second brain or the enteric system. And it talks to your main brain via a super-fast broadband network, which is called the vagus nerve. So they talk to each other. The brain talks to the gut talks back to the brain. It's a two-way system. And when we talk about having gut feelings, you know, going with our gut, it's actually reflecting reality. The two are intimately linked. And within the gut, there are all sorts of very clever mechanisms for regulating how much food you eat, how it's digested, how it's processed. But in there is this 1 to 2 kilos of microbes. And there are 1,000 different species down there and at least 40 trillion different individuals. This is 40,000 billion individuals down there. And there is a richer and more diverse and more complex ecosystem in your gut than you would find in a rainforest. And for most of history, we've had absolutely not a clue of what's going down there. And it's really only been in the last 10 years or so that we've managed to get a grip and to understand what this extraordinary organ and its inhabitants is actually up to.
Now, Michael Mosley, our guest on ABC Radio Perth in Western Australia. I'm Jill O'Shaughnessy. Now, I believe that a local hero of our own has been very helpful as part of this investigation, Professor Barry Marshall.
Absolutely. Barry and I go back an awful long way because the first science documentary I ever made was about him and with him. It was in 1994, and it was for the science series Horizon, and it was called Ulcer Wars. And it was about the work that he and Robin Warren did to demonstrate that this previously unknown bacteria, Helicobacter pylori, was responsible for peptic ulcers and gastric ulcers and things like that. And at the time, ulcers were regarded as completely incurable. You took a drug, Zantac, for the rest of your life. If it didn't work, you had your stomach removed. And here were these two guys in Western Australia claiming that it was caused by a bacteria and that you could get rid of it with antibiotics. And Barry famously brewed up some and swallowed it. And I just loved that fact. So I came out here to make a film about their work. It was widely regarded as heresy by the medical profession and by gastroenterologists. I got a review of my film in the British Medical Journal, which described it as one-sided and tendentious, basically meaning this is absolute nonsense. And I was delighted, obviously, when they went on to win the Nobel Prize and to utterly transform that branch of medicine. And I made that film, and I probably got in the region of 20,000 letters afterwards. This was kind of in the days before email, from people who were desperate. But what it did is it triggered an enormous interest in gut bacteria, which had been largely ignored, because you suddenly realised here was something that people didn't even know existed, causing a disease which we assumed was essentially caused by stress. So what other things were down there doing what other things that we had no idea they were up to? And so they really were the trigger. These two guys in Perth, Western Australia, they really were the trigger for what has proven to be a remarkable revolution in medicine.
Can I ask you what we need to know about what happens when our gut's not healthy?
Sure. So there are an awful lot of people who suffer from irritable bowel syndrome. There are a lot of other gut-related problems such as Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, plus there are an awful lot of autoimmune diseases, plus intolerances, allergies and things like that. And they are all linked to an unhealthy mix of microbes in your gut. They're not necessarily the primary cause, but they're all associated with it. And until now, I think it's largely been regarded as a bit of a black box, which is why doctors have tended to ignore it. Also, at medical school, we are taught nothing about nutrition. My son is at medical school. He's taught nothing about nutrition. It's not regarded as a real science, although people are aware that obviously what you put in your mouth has a fairly profound effect on your health. And that is very odd, and I'm hoping that that is going to change in time. But we know, for example, that you get conditions like celiac disease, where you are intolerant to gluten. And that is massively undiagnosed. It has increased fourfold in the last 40 or 50 years, along with eczema, asthma, and all of those other things. And it turns out that a lot of this is related to your gut, because you have in your gut these things which they called the old friends. And you may have heard of something which is called the hygiene hypothesis, which basically suggested a lot of inflammatory diseases are caused by not being exposed to enough bugs, you know, and we should go out there and get our hands dirty. Now, that is almost certainly not true, and it has been displaced by what I call the old friends hypothesis, because there are plenty of bugs you do not want to be exposed to: typhoid, cholera, rabies. I can honestly promise you that being exposed to them is not going to do you any good at all. But the old friends are a particular group of microbes that we evolved with and which seem to be really, really good for our health. So much so that, for example, in breast milk, there is a particular type of fiber, a thing called a galacto-oligofructosaccharide, which for a long time nobody had any idea why it was there, because babies can't digest it. But it turns out its sole purpose is to feed a particular type of bacteria, which is good for your baby's health and for cutting their risk of allergies and things like that later in life.
Now, one of the things that we hear constantly are these are very modern problems. Allergies are becoming more prevalent and people can't work out why. Are there modern causes?
They are broadly a disease of modern affluent society, and that is partly because we've been getting rid of the old friends. This is a combination of antibiotics, and also we're less in touch with nature. We spend less time outside gardening, getting our hands dirty, and there's plenty of good stuff in the soil which kind of transfers. The other thing is that we eat a much narrower range of foods, and we eat too much junk food, and junk food contains things like emulsifiers, which are very bad for the old friends. So my book is primarily about what happens when your gut goes wrong, but also how you can encourage the reemergence of the old friends.
How do we feed them?
How do you make your old friends happy?
We want to make our friends
make
happy.
Exactly. You want to bring them around for dinner.
What are we going to feed them?
So we are going to feed them with the sort of foods that they like. And they like things like the Mediterranean diet, for example. It turns out that one of the reasons Mediterranean diet we've all heard of is fantastically healthy. The Mediterranean diet is not a diet rich in pasta and pizza and things like that. It has lots of coloured veggies, it has lots of olive oil, nuts, it's got a certain amount of dark chocolate in it, plenty of yogurt, eggs, things like that. And it turns out that all these things your gut bacteria, the good ones, really love. They love fibre. And they will take your fibre and they will turn it into a chemical called butyrate. And butyrate is brilliant because it's anti-inflammatory. It will calm down and cool down, if you like, the gut. And this is inflammatory responses there, but it has a more profound effect. It also influences the brain and it influences the other organs. So there is, for example, quite a lot of evidence now, big study out of Australia showing very recently that people who are profoundly depressed when put on the Mediterranean diet, it had a significant impact in around 30 to 40% of people, which is a lot of people. And the idea that mental illness is linked to the gut is a new one, and yet the evidence is becoming overwhelming. In fact, there's a whole new branch of medicine known as psychobiotics, which is all about the link between the gut and the brain, and particular mental illness, things like autism, schizophrenia, psychosis, And depression and what is going on in your gut.
I think it's very hard for people who aren't medical to work out the difference between what is just, you know, the latest thing you're seeing on the front page of your magazine.
If you are following a diet which is written by a celebrity on the back of a cornflakes packet, then do not be surprised if it goes hideously wrong. The reality is there is an awful lot of really decent science. There are diets which they work. They absolutely do work. I mean, I wrote a book before this called The 8-Week Blood Sugar Diet, which was based on talking to the world's leading experts on obesity. And, you know, I think it is, if you want to lose weight, I think it is one of the best diets out there. And I'm not saying that because I wrote it, although I am, but because it is actually based on people who have studied this stuff for 20 or 30 years. And there is nothing faddish in it. And there is lots and lots of scientific references in it, should you wish to follow it up. Now, the Clever Guts diet is different. It's not really a weight loss diet, but it does build on everything I've learned from writing the previous books. So it does have other elements to it. It has mindfulness. It has a particular exercise regime, which has been shown to be useful in terms of gut health. And it also has intermittent fasting, because, again, there is very good evidence that even going for longer periods without food, and that could just mean overnight or cutting out the snacks, that this encourages the growth of a particular type of bacteria called Akkermansia, which is a particularly beneficial type of bacteria. And so all of it ties together. I would have said that each of my books is kind of, if you like, built on the previous ones. And I'm delighted to say, you know, going way back to intermittent fasting, 5-2 diet, a couple of massive studies, one coming out of Sweden, one coming out of Oxford University soon, which are going to show, you know, big benefit. These things take a long time. I wrote that book 5 years ago. And typically a big trial nutritional study, it will take a year to fund. You've got to get people together. You've got to run it for 2 or 3 years. You're not going to see anything for 4 or 5 years. So I think that what you want to look at is something which has substance to it, which is written by somebody who looks as though they might know what they're talking about. And as I said, my preference in any diet book is one where I've got 40 or 50 scientific references at the back of it, rather than a series of assertions which appear to be based on nothing.
Now, you tested this, like your friend Barry Marshall, you test your work on yourself.
Absolutely. Every time, everything. So I've been taking a lot of poo samples recently.
What fun!
Oh, what fun, exactly. Because one way you can measure the effectiveness of things is that you can... there are companies out there now where you send them some money, they send you a test tube. You send them a poo sample, and a while later they tell you what the mix of bacteria in your gut is. And so I've been doing that. I've been trying a few different foods. I also do this series called Trust Me, I'm a Doctor, which I do for the BBC and which appears on SBS. And I do that with a bunch of other doctors, and we test all sorts of things. And there are lots of things which I kind of start off assuming they're probably nonsense, and it turns out there is something to it. So, for example, I wondered about turmeric. It seems to me that it was overhyped. And yet we did a study, and it was a decent scientific study, 100 people randomly allocated to turmeric or to placebo. And we did actually see genetic changes in the people who were consuming turmeric. This was a very novel test, developed actually to look for early signs of breast cancer. But you do get these subtle changes in the DNA. It's called methylation. And we did see these in a particular gene associated with inflammation and also with depression. And these were influenced by consuming turmeric. And this astonished us as much as it astonished the scientist who did it. Because, you know, I sort of took the whole turmeric latte with a big pinch of turmeric. But lo and behold, there really did seem to be something behind it. And the same is true of apple cider vinegar, which again, I thought, nah. But we did a trial, a large group of people. And again, you know, some of the things didn't hang together. They didn't lose weight. There were some mild changes in inflammation, but there were some quite significant changes in cholesterol. And this was in quite a healthy group of people anyway. And again, we did it with malt vinegar and with a placebo drink. So they didn't really know what they're consuming. Which is important because of the big placebo effect. But that's what I love about what I do. I get to talk to people who know what they're talking about, but I also get to take part in really quite groundbreaking experiments, and that's a big thrill.
Dr. Michael Mosley, thank you very much.
Pleasure.